Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Bradley Wiggins Show by Eurosport, the home of cycling, brought to you by Zwift, the cycling app that makes training fun because fun is fast. I'm Graham Wilgos. Brad.
Hello.
Another stage of the Vuelta to chew over.
Yes. We've got Dan Lloyd, GCN's very own.
Thanks for having me again.
Welcome back, Dan. It's been a while.
It's been a while. I can't remember when I was last on, actually.
Important to have you on because you've been living and breathing the Vuelta on comms.
He loves the Vuelta, Dan.
Baby race. I actually missed the first week because I was on holiday, although I did still try and watch as much of it as I could, as much of it as I was allowed to with the family holiday. But yeah, I've been back into it the second week. 1 week to go.
So stage 15, let's get right into it. It was one potentially for the GC we were looking at before the day, but one man rode away from everyone else and he was out there for a long time, Brad.
Yeah.
Rafa Majka.
Yeah.
Chapeau to him today.
Was it 85 kilometres off the front on his own? Brilliant ride. We saw at the end of his interview there, he's quite emotional, wasn't he? Talking about the death of his father early in the year, which I wasn't aware of, and he was doing it for him. But it's been a while since Rafa actually won a race. So I think it's you know, someone of his quality, you know, you've seen him in the Tour de France so present, not only working for Pogacar this year, but twice King of the Mountains, of course, in the Tour de France. And he's had such a great career, Olympic medalist, of course. But today, you know, to win a stage as well and into this last week, the real strong men are coming to the fore. And it was the same with Bardet yesterday. You know, these aren't people that are just kind of, we almost become accustomed to at the Vuelta, is people winning stages that we've never heard of. And it's their stepping stone and platform into the world of cycling. But the last 2 days, although we haven't had the action behind that maybe we expected from a GC battle, we're getting some of the sort of big names of the sport the last few years winning, which is good.
Mm. And it's interesting, like you said, that we didn't know, obviously, about Rafael's father. And why would we? You have to have a certain level of celebrity, I guess, for people to be interested in not only what you do as an athlete, but also what's going on around in your life. Brad knows that only too well. Once you get to that level, then people start to be interested in other parts. But for the vast majority of pro riders, you know, we only see what they do on the bike and we start questioning whether they're off form or what's going on, and we don't know the little things that have happened to them during the season. And when you do realize it, and someone like Rafa takes a win today, you think, well, actually that could affect him the whole season, really. You know, if he's not been quite where we expect him to be, that's probably a very good reason why.
Pointed to the sky afterwards, didn't he, when he crossed the line?
Yeah.
And then became clear why subsequently in his interview. Almost 4,000 vertical meters today. I mean, it's a big old day to spend 80 kilometers out on your own.
Yeah, and also it also adds weight to what I was saying on the post show, that this lad in the red jersey, you know, he's not there because they're letting him be there.
Odd Christian Eichen.
Yeah, I mean, it was a very small group at the end there. Intermarché took up the riding and he's there on merit at this stage. And I suppose we maybe get a bit guilty of overemphasizing it in the post show and the pre-show about them gifting him the jersey and deciding when they take it back. He's there on merit and he's there for a reason. And I suppose it occurred to me today, actually, this guy could finish on the podium. That's if they dislodge him at this stage. I mean, we saw Primoz crash last week. You know, one crash, and we've seen Primoz crash out of a lot of races, haven't we, over the last couple of years. It's the only time he sort of is fallible, really, in these races. So it's not over, really. And they rode today like a team that are, you know, 2 weeks into a grand tour with a team leader of someone who could defend to the end. Now, whether that happens or not remains to be seen, but he was there today on merit, really. Yeah. And, you know, all credit to him.
He's there for the long haul, though, isn't it? This is not like where Magnus Cort Nielsen got caught inside the line, then just completely sat up and lost almost a minute in a couple of hundred metres. Even if he does go out of the red jersey, he's still going to be there thinking, well, where can I end up? You know, could be top three on the podium, could it be top five? You know, top 10 would be the best result he's ever had in a Grand Tour by quite some margin. So even if he does end up losing that red jersey, he's not going to give up. He's going to be up there fighting every day.
Mm. Well, he's going to have to lose 5.5 minutes at the moment if he's going to finish outside of the top 10. So, I mean, he's got 1:36 on Roglic. We're impressed with Intermarché, and we're now talking about Intermarché for a very good reason.
Yeah, and rightly so. And if he does lose 5.5 minutes, it's there's going to be hell of a day to do that. And I don't think he'll be the only one who loses time if that happens. You know, that's not going to be an isolated incident where he loses 5.5 minutes on his own. He's got a strong team around him. It's not like he's isolated in these late stages of these stages. You know, that will be a spectacular effort. And the like of which we've seen from Chris Froome in the past, where he blows the race to pieces and people lose huge chunks of time. So he won't be on his own if he loses 5.5 minutes. So I find that hard to see happening, to be honest, at this stage.
Mm. It was everyone, almost it seemed like every man for themselves right at the beginning of today. It wasn't that anyone could control it. First of all, but just because it was such a frenetic start. I think it was 57 kilometres per hour, the average, for the first half an hour. The first hour, it was 50 kilometres plus. Insane start to the day at this stage of any Grand Tour, let alone one where you've already battled through 30 degrees plus heat every single day almost.
A lot of them have been, but we just haven't had the chance to watch them because unlike the Tour or the Giro, the Vuelta doesn't have live coverage from the start of every single day. Today was one of those where they decided to use the extra TV time and all the costs that come with it. And so we got to see all the attacking at the start, and it did go on for a blooming long time, didn't it? You know, Sepp Kuss going up the road, that was a really interesting one. And you're there thinking, wow, you know, if this isn't brought back, this is going to change things.
Well, Kuss could have ended the day in red.
Potentially, yeah. You just didn't know what was going to happen. I mean, it's good that we had to start because, you know, the end wasn't as interesting as we were hoping because we didn't have much GC action. We kind of knew with 25Ks to go, maybe even more, that Rafał Majka was going to take the stage win. And those are the days where you're thankful that you're able to watch the first part because so much happens there. There's so many different dynamics within different competitions within the race, whether it's King of the Mountains, whether it's young riders, maybe not appropriate here with Bernal being in it, but, you know, with the red jersey as well, Sepp Kuss still being up there on GC. And I said in commentary, but it's a real prime example of why it's quite handy to have another rider in your team that's high up on GC, because rather than having to put your whole team on the front to chase another dangerous rider, you've got one that's even more dangerous yourself and you can sit back, let other people take charge of it.
Fabio Aru looks like he might escape with Majka at one stage. And of course, this is Fabio Aru's final race. He retires at the end of the Vuelta. At only, I think he's 31. He's still pretty young, particularly for a GC man. You'd expect, or as we might have seen him back in 2015, I think, when he won the Vuelta, we really thought he might develop into a real regular GC contender. Would have been a great swan song for him.
Yeah, but I guess there's a reason he is retiring and he's not the rider he was. Mm. He's had some really dry years, hasn't he, now up to this point? And he was sort of poised to become the next Vincenzo Nibali and take over as Italian's next big Grand Tour rider. I mean, he almost looked like him on the bike and everything. He had a very, very similar, you know, was he top? He was a podium in the Tour de France as well one year. I'm sure he was third in the Tour de France. He obviously has won the Vuelta, but injury plagued him after that and lots of other things, legal cases and things like that. It would have been, but I mean, we're not talking about the same Fabio Aru as we used to sort of see him as.
The man who made the best effort to try and catch Majka out front in the end was Steven Krawczyk for Jumbo-Visma. What was he thinking when he was caught between the two? He was caught between the chasing bunch and he was holding pretty firm a minute and a half to Majka for almost 50 kilometres of that race. Okay, Majka ended up putting a little bit more time into him and then when he knew he'd got it, he lost it again come the end. Interesting old day for Steven Krawczyk. Is he going to get some criticism today for that? Or should he get more praise?
We talked about this in the post-race show as well, didn't we, Brandon? What could he do at that point? He would have looked equally silly by dropping out of it completely with 30Ks to go when he knew the stage win wasn't up for grabs anymore. So obviously initially when he was between the two groups, he would have been thinking, you know, I'm fresher, I'm a great climber, I can catch Rafał Majka and try and take a stage win here at the race. Mm. After a while, obviously he would have realised, in that first cat climb, the gap held so steady, it was 1:30 pretty much the entire way up. It didn't rock either way, 1 or 2 seconds either way, maybe not more than that. So at the top of that, he probably would have been thinking, well, I'm here now. I can't just sit up and save energy for the rest of the race at this point. I might as well just carry on. But it would have taken quite something out of him because although he wasn't alone as long as Rafał Majka was, he was there for quite some time in the end over some really hard terrain.
Mm. Jumbo-Visma, are they looking at that as a tactic? Okay, everyone else has to ride. If Krawczyk's up the road, then we can just sit in Intermarché's wheel. They've got the jersey. It's up to them to control it.
I think they were riding anyway. I got the sense really that it's showing that they're incredibly confident in how they're all riding to give Stephen Kreis like the freedom to go up the road to chase a stage win. Because in his post-race interview, he said, I appreciated the fact that I was allowed to try and go for this stage win. So they had allowed him to go for his own personal ambitions today, which must mean that they're pretty confident in all of the rest of their riders and indeed in Kreis like for the rest of this race as well.
Mm. The fact that it's the day before the rest day, did that speak to the fact that it was so full gas from the beginning today?
I don't know. It's just the nature of the race. Half the race will be exhausted at this point. And anyone who's got legs or ridden themselves into this point, the likes of Micah and Bardet and that, it's an opportunity now to get into the break and get a stage win. You know, everyone's sort of, so many guys now are well back in GC that these sort of stages are almost a whittling down process. And if you've got good legs and can get into a breakaway because you're far down on GC, then it just becomes a sort of man-a-man situation like today where you just, it's almost easy. You know, half the battle is getting into the break. And half the breakaway is exhausted once they make the break because that's success for them. So you get to the second part of the race and it's just a case of who's got the legs. And because of the terrain, it makes it so much easier to just have a natural whittling down process and there's a natural selection and the strongest riders come to the fore. We've seen that for the last couple of days now.
Mm. Adam Yates, has he got the legs or hasn't he? Because some days it's like he has.
Yeah, no.
He blows hot, he blows cold.
Yeah, and that's the thing with Adam, isn't it? We don't know and we kind of hope he has. But if you've got the legs on a stage like today, then it bodes well for the next few days.
Mm.
So we're hoping that Adam, you know, comes with a bit more next week. But this whole Vuelta has been a bit like that, hasn't it? It's very sort of up and down, and Bernal is almost a shadow of the. No, I wouldn't say he's a shadow, but he was so dominant and so kind of angry at the Vuelta, at the Giro early in the year in terms of making a statement and making a big statement towards the rest of the world that he's back. He even said that one day, didn't he? And when he did that and he didn't go to the Tour de France, it almost looked like, yeah, this guy's going to come back and make the same statement at the Vuelta, but it's not looking like that at the moment. But that's, you know, there's some tough days to come still, isn't there, really? And someone like Bernal, you can never really underestimate until that job is done, really, because he's someone who could produce something like he did at the Giro or produce something like Froome did at the Giro a couple of years ago.
Mm. I wonder what Yates would be satisfied in this race, because now that he's with Ineos, you make this assumption that it's the wins all they're interested in. But for Yates, you know, he had fourth at the Tour many years ago and he was a very young rider. I think he won the young rider competition too. But he's never finished on the podium of a Grand Tour. It's not like his brother Simon that's won this race. So I just wonder where he'd be satisfied with. He might be thinking, I'd love to be on the podium of this race, second or third. I'd be happy with that. But you just make assumptions based on the team that he's racing for now.
Mm. Seventh and eighth on GC they are. And there's a matter of 13 seconds between them. Jack Haig in sixth. And then you've got the Movistar pair. Now, they were isolated today. Would that have affected them? Looking ahead to the next to the coming week, are they going to be thinking,
it's hard to say. I mean, it depends how many people they had on the side of the road to give them bots. I didn't notice any of them go back to the team car, but there was that point, like you said, where it was just those two left in that GC favourites group, and that wasn't on that third cat climb. That was on the first category climb before. Mm. You know, and you realise then how important teammates are. You saw Dylan van Baarle going back and getting bottles and taking them back to Bernal, Yates and whoever else was left there. They didn't have that luxury, so it either meant one of them would have to go back to fetch bottles for both, or they hoped they had people on the side of the road. And you'd imagine a team might well have helpers to do that because they know that they've only got four riders around these two guys now left in the race. So they'd be in the knowledge that there might come a point where they don't have anyone around them still. I mean, it's hard to know how it would affect them in the last week, but the good thing is that they were both there. They both still look good. They have done for the whole race. And I think they'll be expecting a lot from that team over the last week of this race. I don't think they'll settle for where they are at the moment.
Mm. And Ineos, they're down another man. They've lost Jonathan Narvaez today, having lost Richard Carapaz yesterday. So their position looking overall, surely looking weaker, Brad.
Yeah, but they're not riding this race like they were at the Giro, where everyone was on the front and that was a real team performance. It was a real performance, you know, kind of in the vein of what we've become used to over the years with Ineos and Sky. Whereas this race, it just seems very much like, I don't know, it's a very, almost, I wouldn't say they've come in underprepared, but short of numbers maybe.
Mm.
You know, when they won the Giro, it looked like, you know, with G going up at the Tour and all that, that this was really the year. They looked like they'd come back to a position where they'd spread their big leaders over the three races correctly rather than trying to go for a two-pronged attack, where they could, you know, really fulfil that ambition, which they've always spoke about, winning all three Grand Tours in the year. And it looks like this race, they've just come up short. I mean, sending Carapaz there, who's clearly, you know, exhausted and not the rider he was at the Olympics and stuff. And
do you think Carapaz would still be here, though, if Bernal was in the red jersey?
Well, I guess he'd have to be, because I can't imagine Carapaz is that exhausted that he wasn't able to finish, because he's got 2 weeks into the race.
Mm. But it's because it's that psychological thing as a cyclist, isn't it? If you've got a big job to do, then you can do it. But because he's sort of floating around thinking, well, I don't feel as good as I did at the Olympics or at the Tour de France before, and what's my job here? I'm just sort of next to Bernal and Yates, but we're not leading the race. Yeah. Psychologically, it makes it hard
that has an effect, yeah.
To concentrate on and to find the positives rather than thinking, well, I'm just really tired, I'm empty. I reckon if Bernal or Yates were in the red jersey right now, he wouldn't feel as empty because his mind would be concentrated occupied on the job that he's got to do.
Mm. Mm. All right, we'll leave it there. We'll be back with more from the Bradley Wiggin Show after this. Brad, we're sponsored by Zwift, the cycling app where fun is fast but also unlocks performance. I'm a big fan, getting on there with the boys, David and Stephen, as you know.
Yeah.
I've been exploring a few of the training plans.
Oh yeah, tell me about it.
Well, training plans on Zwift help you improve every single time. I'm currently on board with G's training plan. Geraint Thomas, fun is flying uphill.
I bet that's a tough one.
It's not easy. This workout focuses on improving your muscular endurance, a pillar of any great time trialist like you, Brad, mountain climber or stage racer, to help you deal with hard surges and improve your ability to fly uphill.
Well, that's quite good, Graham. Is that, and do you find it's helping you improve?
Helps you improve just because it's so easy to use. And if you want to find out just how simple that is, there's a special offer, a 7-day free trial. Find out more, download the app today. Welcome back to the Bradley Wiggin Show, sponsored by Zwift. Week ahead, Brad, 6 stages left after the rest day. Stage 16, we've got a sprint, and then we've got the Queen stage, the run-in for which will happen on the road to the Welter's favourite summit, it seems, yeah. Lagos de Covadonga.
Yeah.
I always associate it with, I mean, they love the Covadonga, don't they, the Welter organisers, or they yeah. seem to, sort of found it during the 80s, and I always associate it with Robert Miller's stolen Vuelta, 85-86.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's brutal, isn't it, this last week, and it's been a pretty tough race up to now, and you'd imagine that it sets the stage for us to have something really good play out on the road in terms of, and we anticipated that a bit this weekend, but these stages, I don't think there'll be any shying away from, really. I think that we won't fail to have some action there. And I guess Primoz is pretty much the man that we expect to dominate those stages with Jumbo-Visma because of the way they've been riding. So, yeah, I mean, it is a Queen stage. It's a finish that's synonymous with the Vuelta. You know, a bit like the Angleroo, they've both been the two stages that we've become so accustomed to over the years.
Mm. Because there aren't that many iconic climbs in Spain, are there? Really? When you compare it to Italy or France, where you can list off a whole load of climbs where you think, wow, that's seen some racing in the past. There just don't seem to be so many in the world. But like you said, Lagos de Covadonga, the Angleroo, those are the two big ones, and we've got Covadonga coming up.
Almost felt like there was a game of one-upsmanship happening for a while with the respective Grand Tours. So France saying, well, look, we've got Alpe d'Huez, and then the Vuelta saying, well, look, Covadonga's our answer to Duez. And then Italy saying, well, here you go, how about the Zoncolan?
Yeah.
Try this on for size.
Yeah.
But we've got another new climb coming up for stage 18, I think I'm right in saying, which looks like an absolute wall to finish. It's the Alto del Gamonturu.
Mm. Know it well.
Well, but that's an HC climb, and there's two Cat 1 climbs as well, and that's after the Queen stage. So, I mean, that's going to be 2 days that surely we're looking at. That's what's going to define this GC fight.
It won't fail to, will it, really?
Yeah. The Movistar guys, Enric Mas and Superman Lopez, is that where they're looking at making the difference? Is that where they can make the difference?
I think anyone who's got any aspirations of winning this race or dislodging the red jersey or Primoz and stopping them trying to win it,
yeah,
it has to be those stages.
Yeah.
And Movistar, you'd have to say more than anyone, because this is their world championships. You know, the Movistar team, how many times have they won the Vuelta? This, you know, we've said a few times, but I don't think a podium is success for them here. It will do, but they're here to win the race, make no mistake. And they will try everything possible to do that with the two riders that they have.
They've got to do it there as well, haven't they? Because we've got the time trial coming on the last day. This is not the traditional sort of Madrid sprint, you know, a bit of a champagne sipping on the way to it. We've got a race on the final day, and it's a time trial against the clock, which Roglic will be favourite to win, not just to put time into the other GC riders. So for Mas, Lopez, Bernal, Yates, all the others, Jack Hay, if they've got any designs on winning this race, they know that they've not only got to get ahead of Primoz Roglic, but by some margin, so it's not taken back on the last day. So, I mean, they can only do what they can do. We can sit here all day long and say, well, they've got to go there. If they can't, they can't. But we'll wait and see. I'm sure they'll try something.
Lacquer's collective cover is made especially for cyclists. This is bicycle insurance made for everyone, from Grand Tour winners to cyclists hitting the pedals for the first time. Lacquer has transformed traditional insurance with no more fixed upfront premiums. Instead, your monthly contributions are based on the collective's claims that month, meaning you could pay nothing if nobody claims. Your max monthly price is capped, but the savings are all yours. Claims are handled by Lacquer's team of cycling experts and usually agreed within a day, with no depreciation or excess. The Bradley Wiggin Show listeners can get their first 30 days free. Head over to www.lacquer.co and sign up using the code Wiggins.
From classic climbs to the Breton Classic today, which almost went by under the radar, but it ended up being a bit of a thrilling finish. So we had Alaphilippe, Jonas Vingegaard, Ineos Sent, a team featuring Luke Rowe, Owen Doull, Ben Swift, Ethan Hayter, Jasper Stuyven was there. So it was a field absolutely packed with some top tier guys. Won in the end by Benoit Cosnefar in a thrilling sprint between a two up sprint between him and Alaphilippe. So Dan, Brad, we've all watched the finish over again that we missed while we were watching the Vuelta earlier. Amazing two-up sprint. Cosnefar really showed his power there against the man in the world champs rainbow bands.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great race, that. It's a world championship in itself, you know, 250 kilometres on a circuit.
It was there, wasn't it, when Weinstein won?
It was, 2000, when Roman Weinstein's won. And yeah, I mean, I don't know really, we saw Tadej Pogacar, didn't we? We were watching a little clip before of him just absolutely, you know, sitting up on the flat, really, and had enough. And
you don't see people go pop quite like that, that often, do you?
No, but I think you know, you've got to remember just how far into the race that was and how tough the race was up to that point, and he was in the front.
But was yeah, 200Ks in.
Julien won't be happy about getting beat, that's for sure.
You know, not in front of his home crowd.
No. But Cosnefar, what a brilliant win for him.
I mean, he's another rider that blows hot and cold. I think he was slightly injured at the start of this year, Cosnefar. But he's one of those, he's just a puncher. He can't get over any long climbs. But on the short, sharp ones, he's amazing. You know, Alaphilippe, we see him get up the mountains often. And he's up there on the Tour de France GC, obviously, on a couple of occasions. But with Cosnefar, he just can't get up anything more than about 3 or 4 kilometres long without getting dropped. But if it's multiple climbs of a few hundred metres, 1.5Ks, he's brilliant at that. And yeah, to take that win in front of Alaphilippe, because it wasn't just Alaphilippe at the end, was it? It was Mikel Honoré, also a De Koenig Quickstep. So it was 2 against 1. They'll be starting to think, well, maybe we should have started attacking towards the end one by one rather than leaving it for the sprint. But yeah, hindsight's a wonderful thing.
Alaphilippe would have been quite confident, surely, as well, looking at Honoré and then looking at Cosnefar, thinking, okay, if I ride this well and I play this right, I've got this.
Well, he actually got ahead of him, didn't he, on the jump? Yeah, clearly Cosnefar just had the strength, really. He beat Julien, which is a rare thing.
What about Pogacar then? So not necessarily still in the form that he was earlier in the summer.
Clearly not, is he? And obviously post-Olympics, you know, they did everything to keep the heads on after the tour, minus the celebrations of winning his second tour, you imagine, because they were straight out. They were on the flight with us the next day out to Tokyo. And finished it up with a bronze medal there. And you can imagine him coming back and then sort of getting enthralled in all the kind of post-tour celebrations and the things that go with it in terms of, you know, him being fated back home and like that. So it would have had an effect on him. You know, he's achieved his goals for the season. And, you know, his goal wasn't to continue off the Olympic Games to try and have a performance in Plouay here. So we can let him off.
We might not have seen the end of him this year, though, because the fact is that he was in that group with Alaphilippe, Cosnefar and Mikel Honoré. So he had the strength to make it. He just lacked the endurance and I guess the glycogen stores at the end of the day to keep it going. So he would have had a break after the Olympics because obviously it was the end of a very long stint of racing and training by that point. But the endurance comes back pretty quick, doesn't it?
Once he's allowed to get back into his routine of of being a bike rider as opposed to being pulled left and right. I think, you know, he's probably got some end of season goals, and I wouldn't be surprised to still see him up there, potentially a starter at the World Championships and the likes of Lombardy in that.
Well, so exactly that, Brad. His programme now is European Championships, September the 12th, the Worlds on the 26th, and then he's finishing his season in the final week of the season at Lombardia.
I thought he might do Roubaix, because remember last year when Roubaix was supposed to be in October or whenever it was, and it got cancelled in the end, but there were a few riders that normally wouldn't take the risk, you know, GC guys that would say, oh, I might give Roubaix a go because we're going into the off-season. So I wonder whether he might do that. But it's going to be a great end of season, isn't it? With the Worlds in Flanders, Paris-Roubaix the week after, the first ever women's Paris-Roubaix on the Saturday, men's on the Sunday, and the Tour of Lombardy, because at this point it's quite easy to start thinking, oh, it's been a long old year of bike racing, like, when is it going to end? You know, and after the World Championships, your interest starts to go down somewhat. But with Roubaix on the horizon the week after, that's going to be a cracking end to the year.
He's also up there in the World Tour rankings, yeah. Let's not forget. So he's chasing that towards the end of the year, which, you know, to win the World Tour overall. So
chasing the number one spot.
Yeah.
Is that a difficult thing to do, having had the season that he's had? So he's won Liège-Bastogne-Liège, he's won Tirreno-Adriatico.
So he's going to be well up there in the World Tour rankings. Yeah. So, you know, he's...
Tour Slovenia and the UAE Tour, he's won too. Mm. So to ask him to then reboot after having that rest between...
Well, he'd want to do it himself, I imagine. Yeah. It's not just a team thing. And you know, a lot of these riders, it's better because otherwise you just, especially as a tour winner, it's very easy to get... You know, write the rest of your season off and then get into sort of the whole kind of, you know, not just the celebrations, but, you know, being pulled left and right and being sort of fated here and there and everywhere.
Mm. You have to start training really early if
before
you, do
you
that
know
as well,
it. It's
you?
October and you've had 3 months off. So I think for him and building into next year, he's a bike rider ultimately, and he's most at home when he's a bike rider. So it almost protects him from all that by being at these races and say you have goals. So he'll have invites left and right. And, you know, now he can say, well, I can't do that, I'm afraid. So he'll have a reason. It's almost it suits him.
Mm. How did you find that?
Very difficult.
The reboot after being, after a successful
extremely
period.
Difficult, yeah.
Yeah,
because, you know, you're in high demand. So it's hard to say no. And obviously you want to experience the things that you're not normally able to experience as a bike rider. And they only come around once, a lot of them. So, you know, but you do pay for price for it the following year. And obviously he's coming in next year as two-time winner of the Tour de France. He'll be wanting to win a third tour. It depends what your aspirations are long term, really, you know, for him. Mine was never really about winning the second tour. It was trying to get me around winning the first.
Mm.
But he's a different, like I said, on the tour, he's different gravy, isn't he?
Different animal. Dan, how did you find that after a block of racing and a rest and then going back and then having to screw your head back on after a short break?
Well, I can tell you that if I had won the tour, I would have made damn sure I made the most of the celebrations afterwards, a bit like Brad and Geraint did after they won theirs. Yeah. Oh, yeah, Pogacar is a different breed from that point of view. He just loves riding and racing his bike, doesn't he? So it's in some ways a surprise to see him back racing after Olympic medal, winning the Tour de France for a second time. For me personally, I mean, it's very different when you haven't got that level of pressure on your shoulders. I was there to help other riders and occasionally try and go for my own result, but if I didn't get it, it didn't matter too much. I wasn't being paid the big bucks or anything. So I never had to really reset myself that much, because I think the concentration and the pressure on me was never that great at all. So it's a very different beast. So I just have 3-4 weeks off at the end of the season, reboot and start again. I quite like that routine. I like the routine of a bike rider, to be honest. And the thing that I missed most when it was taken away from me, I didn't get another contract, was not knowing what my season looked like and my year looked like. Right, I'm going to start training in mid-October, November. I've got a get-together in December. I've got a training camp in January, another one in February. And race season starts here. Then in May, I'm doing this. And then in February sometime, they'll give you another race program. So it's all mapped out for you. And you know where you're at. All your finish lines are there, whether it's the end of a stage, the end of the stage race, the end of a training camp, whatever it is. And you don't realise what comfort you get from that until you haven't got things mapped out. And then I found that quite difficult initially.
It's funny, we're sitting here talking about dissecting why he blew up at 200K. And it's a talking point that Pogacar blew up at 200K today. Yeah, it wasn't so much of a talking point. And it was, we almost, you know, he gets omitted from that is Carapaz climbing off at the Vuelta 2 weeks into it.
Mm.
There's a difference there. You see the sort of the standard he set, Pogacar, as to kind of anyone else could blow up at 200K and it's not a talking point after the season they've had. But
yeah,
that's the level he's set, and that's the benchmark. Is everything he does now is scrutinised.
Yeah. I was going to ask you before that, do you miss the routine the further you get away from it?
No.
Not at all?
Not at all, no. If anything, it became a chore towards the end.
Mm.
the routine of normal life is establishing a routine in normal life is the hardest thing when you stop. And the quicker you can do that, the better it is for your life and the way you live it.
Mm. Before we go, and before we say goodbye to Dan, and thank you, Soccer Aid on your bike.
Yeah, on your bike tonight, 9 a.m.
Yeah.
9 p.m. Yeah, 9 p.m.
Talk us through ITV. With TV's Freddie Flintoff.
Yes, TV's very own Ken Barlow. Two celebrity teams of four racing across Yorkshire over three stages for UNICEF.
Yeah.
So it's a really good cause, and they'd never ridden the bikes. We got boys' owns Keith Duffy in there, and a few other guys, a few other people. We got Bradley Walsh's son Barney, a few other people.
Yeah, various soap actors.
Yeah, but so that was it. Really, it was good, and it was kind of I was like the expert telling them how to ride a bike. You know,
you enjoy that?
It was good. It was really good fun. Yeah.
All right,
and, it made a great show.
Well, we'll be sure to tune in.
Definitely.
All right, well, that brings us to the end of this episode of The Bradley Wiggins Show by Eurosport, brought to you by Zwift. Explore, train and compete on the cycling app where fun is fast. Thank you, Brad.
Thank you.
Dan, thank you for joining us. No TV special for you tonight?
No, there isn't. I'll be watching the other one on your bike.
Excellent. If you want to get in touch with us, it's at So We Go for Brad. Dan?
At Daniel Lloyd 1.
And you can follow Eurosport on Twitter at Eurosport_UK. Plus, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook. Thank you, as ever, to our producer, Pete Burton. Finally, from me, it's goodbye. If you enjoyed the show, rate us, subscribe, and share us wherever you get your podcasts. Dan, you're back on Tuesday for TV.
I am, yes. Resumes then, doesn't it, with the welter. So a couple of shows to record tomorrow, but back with the welter on Tuesday. And it's a busy end to the season, isn't it?
Yeah, isn't it just? And Brad, we'll see you for the Queen stage. Are you back on Tuesday?
Tuesday as well,
right,
yeah.
I will see you for the Queen stage on Wednesday.
Yeah,
looking forward to it.
Goodbye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.